John with Quad City Arts, and welcome back to Talking Art, supported by Quad City Bank and Trust. Today, I'm talking art with theatrical artist and educator, Mike Terzinski, a many-hatted multi-hyphenate. Mike, welcome to Talking Art.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. You and I have known each other through the theater world for several years, and it's a pleasure to be able to sit down and talk with you. You've got a million things going on.
Always.
Yeah. which a lot of theater artists do.
Yes.
But the thing I really want to talk about, because I got like a little backstage tour, is in addition to all your theater work, you work at Skellington Manor.
Yep.
And are working on the Haunted Manor right now.
Yes, yeah. I'm entering my 10th year at Terrence Skellington Manor in Rock Island. And obviously we are getting close to the season.
It's spooky season.
We have our dress rehearsal this coming weekend, and then we'll be open for the whole month of October. And all of the last minute adjustments are happening right now. So
yeah.
we're very excited.
Well, it's awesome. And I am someone who... I like horror and scary things and hate them at the same time.
Yeah.
Because I hate a jump scare. Mm-hmm. It truly frightens me.
I found my way there kind of backwards.
Sure.
I was not a normal haunted house going person in my youth.
Yeah.
Because I had the same problem. I was more anxious about my friends seeing me react.
Sure.
Poorly. And so I never really jived with that. Like I did it every once in a while, but it wasn't really my thing. And then a friend of mine introduced me to this kind of world of the technical aspects behind the scenes, the creation of the props, the lighting. It's all theater, just in a very different context. And so that kind of grabbed onto it. And then I went, oh, and I don't have to be scared if I'm the one who's making the scares. So I still have several cast members who try and get me over the course of the year.
Sure.
But other than that, I don't have to worry about any of the props or anything getting me because I put them there.
Right. So. You know where it is. Well, that was the thing that blew me away when you took me through the space was, A, all that goes into it. Like, mm-hmm. You look at that building from the outside and you're like, oh, it's a... Da, da, da. And then you go in there and enter the world that you guys have created there, and it blew my mind. Like there's so much in there.
We've been together as a company for 32 years.
Mm-hmm.
Before we were at the Manor, we were out in Donahue, Iowa. We were Terror in the Woods.
Yeah.
We bought the building in 2009, and ever since then, it's been a constant evolution.
Yeah.
We talk about it every year, where we kind of looked back through old photos or even just old memories of what these rooms used to be. Not just when it was a Masonic temple, but also when we first moved in. And then it's a constant evolution where we get to change a little bit every year. We get to constantly mm-hmm. update it. We get to constantly add to it. And over the course of those 32 years, we've added a lot. and we are lucky enough to be able to just kind of keep it up year round, keep working on it, keep making it more interesting, adding more props, more design, bringing new people in with new ideas. It's always a fun evolution to just kind of watch continue on.
Well, and that's what was so impressive to me, too, is how... you guys treat it. It's not just a series of jump scares, but there is theatrical storytelling and there's narrative and there's all the things that make art and theater and storytelling in there.
Some of my favorite bits, I guess, would be that our actors really, really dive into creating their own backstory.
Yeah.
As a theater maker and a theater goer and a theater educator, being able to watch actors take their own reins. And there's some improv to it. There's some storytelling to it. People who play D&D and other role-playing games really get into haunting because they get to kind of have that narrative experience of bringing a character to life.
Yeah.
Some of them are their D&D characters. That's happened before. it's a really fun experience to kind of watch all of this come together and almost naturally create a cohesive family in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
So we used to really struggle with theming and making sure that it all made sense. There was a while there where, mildly problematic, not at the time, but now, an asylum, which we obviously stay away from now for obvious reasons. But there was an asylum, there'd be a hospital, or there'd be, you know, those sorts of things. And that's always hard to kind of pigeonhole people into it. So we've kind of opened it up now. Our theme for the last better part of a decade has been Theater of the Macabre. And therefore, it can kind of just fit anybody and anything and anywhere that it can be. And it allows these actors to costume to their heart's content, to mm-hmm. try new things, to be entertaining. Our biggest thing is if we can't scare you, we'll entertain you.
Right.
Not everybody is a startler. Not everyone is a jump scare person. A lot of people like to go through and go, oh, I see you. And we'll go, okay, fine, you see us. We'll make you laugh. Or we'll make you, you know, yeah. If you're not going to scream, if you're not going to be scared, then we'll still entertain you on your way out the door.
Well, and it's interesting to me, like, I've lived in the immersive theater world, and I think of haunted houses and immersive theater kind of as cousins, mm-hmm. you know, and you brought up D&D, and, you know, I think there's been this resurgence, kind of in part fueled by Stranger Things,
sure.
Of that, but those things where people are able to get into roles and get immersed in these in-depth stories, whether in a haunt or in an immersive theater piece or doing D&D, like, has had such appeal over the last decade in a way that I don't think was there before. And I don't know, like, what your experience has been with that. I mean, to me, I think it's kind of as people are looking to find experiential things rather mm-hmm. than we're just streaming.
But yeah, I think they're looking for those experiences. I think they're looking to grow and challenge themselves in many ways. Mm-hmm. I also think a large part of at least our community is looking for that acceptance in that community.
Sure.
Like most theater in general, you know, there's always that tightness of a cast coming together.
Yeah.
And that bond that is created with it. What's really cool about the haunt is that's forever. In a lot of ways. I mean, we have actors who have been there since the beginning.
That's cool.
They were out in the woods with Mike and Penny, and they've been there ever since. And so they're, you know, they're 30 plus year veterans of the haunt. And sure, they'll tell you. But they have a lot of stories. They have a lot of history. They have a lot of knowledge in how this all works. Because they were out there stapling plastic black bags to walls to make it darker, and now, you know, we're so much more advanced than that, but they still kind of remember where the roots were.
Yeah, and that's so cool. And you guys also do escape rooms at Skellington
yep.
Manor,
yep.
which, again, I feel is all, they're yep. all cousins,
mm-hmm.
all these kind of things. Are those incorporated into the haunt?
Yeah. About, I guess, 10-ish years ago when I first started coming on, that's when the big boom of escape rooms were happening.
Sure.
And it became pretty evident that to attraction owners in general, not just haunts, but just attraction owners in general, escape rooms were going to kind of be the good off-season moneymaker in a
right.
lot of ways. How can you use your space in interesting ways that isn't going to negatively impact your big business in general?
Right.
So we're like, well, sure. Why don't we turn all of our really cool themed rooms into escape experiences.
Yeah.
So it started small. We had one room downstairs, and we kind of tested things out and then grew a little bit out of that and decided, okay, well, let's start putting them up into the haunt and see what happens. And now I think we're seven or eight in, and we're constantly kind of thinking of the next one with kind of the goal being at some point the entire haunt will eventually have an escape room attached to part of it.
That's really cool.
But it's...
Tell us the dates of the haunt and the times and how people can go to the haunt.
It's every weekend in October, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Friday and Saturdays, it's from 7 to midnight, and Sundays, it's from 7 to 10. You can buy tickets at the door, general admission. We also have time ticketing on the website, TerraSkellingtonManor.com, or on our Facebook page, just Terra at Skellington Manor. Those time tickets are $5 more than the general admission, but it means you can reserve your time slot and you'll get into the house in that
yeah.
time slot. It takes about 25 to 30 minutes to walk through, not including wait.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have food trucks outside. We'll have some other various entertainment things outside. We have actors walking the queue line, so you will be entertained even while you're waiting.
That's awesome.
We have some great movie characters that hang out with us outside. We have a Michael Myers and a Jason Voorhees that will stalk you around a little bit.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you make your way through the haunt, come out the back, and if you want to get back in line, you can do that too.
Well, yeah, I saw the trolley that you guys had
yes,
at the Labor
yes,
Day Parade,
yes.
and that was incredible. It was incredible.
That was this time last year, about a week before we opened, that came across somebody's, our owner's Facebook Marketplace. And before the end of the day, it was probably at least a couple days, but it felt like before the end of the day, Mike was driving up in the trolley, and we had it. It was red and green at the time, you know, a pretty standard trolley fare. So the last year has been refurbing it and getting the wrap on it.
That's awesome.
For the Labor Day parade, it got wrapped and it got finished being wrapped 12 hours before that parade. They picked it up at 2 a.m.
Oh my gosh, that's crazy.
And then we had to deck it all out and decorate it and attach the prop to it and all that stuff. So.
I was driving behind it. Yep. We were with Quad City Arts. We had our Festival of Trees float in the Santa Mobile. And it was hilarious because we were driving behind you back from the end of the parade route to the beginning. And you've got this Skellington Manor with all these crazy characters going out. And then right behind the Santa Mobile and Santa hanging out. Yep.
And we are excited now. Now we are considering that our parade float. So we're going to be entering all the other parades. We'll do the Davenport Halloween Parade. We'll be in Festival of Trees. We'll do the St. Paddy's Day Parade. We used to do parades a long time ago. And after COVID, we kind of stopped for a while.
Sure.
But with this now, why not?
Yeah, it's awesome. It looked fantastic.
Yeah, it's real fun.
So kudos. And you're directing 25th Annual Putnam County Spelling Bee.
Yes, which is
by one of my favorite composers, William Finn.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to us about that, because that show's been around, but I don't know, it's, you know, a little off the beaten path.
Yeah, for Musical did it a little over 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the good old rotation is coming around again. I was, that's actually when I was down in Florida is last time it was came around, so I missed it last time. Mm-hmm. So it's always been on my radar. It's always been a show that I've been interested in, but no one had ever been producing it when I was able to. I know Laura did it down at the Black Box a little while back as well. It's such a fun show in so many ways. Being able to, the characterization, I think, is what really stands out to me. We've all had our experiences in childhood of acceptance or lack thereof, dealing with various different hurdles, both of our own accord or also of our families, that strive for perfectionism, that strive to be involved, that strive of acceptance. And there's neurodivergence happening in there. There is the pressure of parents, you know, wanting the best for their kids.
Right.
There's also the opposite of the absent parents. I think everyone can see a little bit of themselves in just about every single character that's up there.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really special thing to be able to portray. I am very much a proponent of theater is a mirror that we are supposed to see ourselves in.
Yeah.
And this show, I think, identifies that pretty well, while still being funny and approachable and digestible, and you're not going home with your head in your hands, wondering, you know, oh my God, what did I do with my life?
Let's go into Augustana a bit, because you're on top of all these other things you do. You are also the technical director and a professor at Augustana.
Yes. Yeah, so we have a really exciting season. Like I just said, Caden is directing Edges, in our student show for the term. Then we have Dr. Popple is directing Mousetrap, Agatha Christie's Mousetrap. We are in rehearsals for that right now.
Yeah.
And actually, my scene shop is bustling away at building that set as we speak. I left notes before I came up. And we're playing a fun, different. We're not doing a full like Victorian on it.
Sure.
Because we've realized that at the beginning of the year, we need to give the students the ability to get the ball rolling.
Right.
And sometimes we don't want to bite off more than we can chew right off at the top of the year.
Sure.
So we're doing a little bit more of a subdued mousetrap, but I think we're going to make some cool design choices to kind of offset the non-big giant living room that normally comes with an Agatha Christie piece, any Agatha Christie piece. Then Penguin Project in January with Dino and Tina. We'll be doing Frozen Junior with both the Penguin Project and the Penguin Players in partnership with Augustana. Then Shelley Cooper in March will be doing Company, a show very dear to Shelley's heart.
Yeah,
she's done it umpteen thousand times, and that's the wonderful part of it, is she is just so in love with that show.
Yeah.
But she has not done it at Augie. She has not done it locally, so she's able to bring her favorite show to her favorite place. And then Jeff Cousins is doing Skin of Our Teeth in May.
So how did you get started in theater?
Chased a girl, like most people. I'm actually an alumni of Alleman, right up the hill from here. I was on the speech team.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing humorous duet interpretation with a buddy of mine, but I never did any theater of any sort. And I actually then auditioned for a show because my girlfriend at the time was in it. And I figured that's a good way to spend time together. And I didn't get cast. And so then I still stayed on the speech team. And I got a call from the director of that show a week before they opened while I was at a speech tournament saying the guy playing Renfield in Dracula dropped out.
Yeah.
Learn this part. And it was an adaptation of Dracula that he himself had wrote. Mm-hmm. It was a very interesting adaptation, to say the least. They were all like...
Save some dollars.
They were all like teachers in a like boarding school or something. I don't know.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but the student was Van Helsing. I don't remember. But I learned that part, pretty big part of Renfield, and kind of fell in love with that character acting side of things. And because I then, quote, saved the day, then they kept casting me and other stuff, whether I deserved it or not.
Yeah.
But I really enjoyed acting and hanging out with my friends. And so when I went to Iowa for school, I was originally going to go for history, be a history teacher and or lawyer. I don't know what direction I was really planning at that point. And figured, well, I have all these credits. I'll get a theater minor. You know, maybe that'll help me when I'm teaching or something along those lines. And then they're like, well, actually, well, you have enough credits. Just get the major. Oh, okay, fine.
Yeah.
Took an acting class, realized acting in college is a lot different than acting in a small Catholic high school with volunteers. There's, you know, there's form and there's structure and there's technique and who's Alexander and who's Meisner. What? After doing my first real, like, in-depth Stanislavski class, I was like, I don't know if acting's the path for me.
But I enjoy it a lot.
I enjoy it. But I do lean on those things, but I realized I didn't necessarily think that was necessarily like the career.
Sure.
The career path for me.
Well, you have a much better chance of having a career if you're a technician than that.
I also noticed that. But I had no experience with any of the technical side in high school. It was all run by a couple of faculty members. They were very nice and they did their best, but they didn't really expose the students to it. And so I was able to latch on Valerie Moore, actually.
Yeah.
Was my first stage manager I worked with at Iowa. And we did a very interesting show together by one of the graduate playwrights. But I learned what stage management was at that point. I was the assistant stage manager for the show, and I'm like, oh, I really like being on this side. I like being in a rehearsal room. I like being able to be a part of these conversations. I love the collaborative process. And so then I started taking the design classes. I started stage managing. I was almost exclusively a stage manager in school.
Okay.
To kind of find my path. And even leaving, I took a stage management gig down in Florida. But that parlayed into, because I had this kind of well-roundedness where I was tech directing in the summers, I was designing here and there where I could, and then stage managing is my quote-unquote career. When I got down to Florida, I was able to kind of parlay that into doing everything.
Yeah.
I was a stage management intern, but I would work on the shop when I wasn't in rehearsal. They were calling me in if there was an emergency to do X, Y, and Z, and that led me into being the production manager for them after my first year down there.
Yeah.
Now, granted, in no way, shape, or form should a 23-year-old be a production manager of a $1.5 million Lord SPT 10 theater. I learned a lot, and I learned I wasn't ready.
Sure.
And so then I went back into freelancing and moved back to the area, and then it kind of has gone from there.
Yeah.
It's been a grind at times. My most of my 20s was making sandwiches at Panera Bread at 5 o'clock in the morning. And then leaving at 2 p.m. right after lunch to get to some theater and paint it or build it or direct it or design it or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
But I couldn't be happier than when I got off work and being able to go and make my art. And I was lucky enough that there was an opening at Augustana around about 10 years ago. And that's when I took the job with Performance Halls. I was able to do some lighting and sound, but because of that job, I could still do some theater off on the side. And then I somehow was one of the probably 10 people in the country who got a theater job during COVID.
Right.
So Denny down at Circa was in need of a tech director. And I was kind of not falling out of love with my job at Augustana, but with COVID, there was no events going on.
Yeah.
So there was no reason for me to be here. Ended up being furloughed. totally understandable.
Right.
But I missed doing it, and I said, well, if I'm going to jump, now's the time to jump.
Yeah.
Denny gave me that opportunity, and many thanks to him for that, because it really kicked me in the butt to get back into the professional theater world. And then just happenstance happened that then the job at Augustana opened up. And while I pained me to leave Denny, you know, kind of short after only a year of doing some work with him, it was just too good of an opportunity to pass up. To come back to Augustana, a situation where I knew I enjoyed the people, I enjoy the environment, I enjoy the work atmosphere, but also then to be in the theater side of things, to work with students in a different capacity, and to educate, which I didn't realize was my goal in life until I started doing it. And now I realize, like, I can't ever go back. Like, I enjoy the side of it, of being able to make that next generation of artists, and to be that, to watch that passion grow, and to be able to see them, you know, light up when they get to create something, and they try something new, and they succeed, or when they fail.
Right.
And we're able to then be that safety net and pick them back up and show them the way. And it's a really, really rewarding and exciting opportunity that I didn't think I knew existed in the theater while still being able to create theater.
Well, and that's something that I think I see so much in the faculty at Augie, and something that appeals to me about working with that age of student is, like, those times when you're in college, I'm assuming most majors, but in theater, I know for me specifically, it's like you're learning about all these new plays and forms and styles that you weren't exposed to in high school. And so it's such a laboratory, and it is so focused on the process. Mm-hmm. And I know I have found as a performer, like, I love rehearsing. Like, I could rehearse forever. We open the show, do the first weekend. And then after that, for me, like, it kind of, anymore, it loses me as a performer. So I'm like, okay, now we're just doing, like, you're trying to keep it alive and fresh and all of that. But I love being able to go through the process and solve the problems and do all that. And I feel in college like that's what it's for.
Yeah.
You know, is to really teach the process of it.
Yeah. And the process in academia is obviously so much different than the professional process too, which is refreshing in some ways. And it's not to say that I get the professional process of you come in memorized, you do 2 weeks of 8 to 10 hour rehearsals, you tech it, and you're open on Tuesday, right? Like, I get it. We got to make money. And we have to keep the ball rolling. But being able to take that step back and enjoy it a little bit more. As you said, I enjoy the process too. Like, I could rehearse, just have those conversations and trying new things. And, oh, yeah, that's the best part.
Yeah.
Performing it. but being in a rehearsal room, I really, really enjoy that. And being able to kind of expand that a little bit. While still doing it, quote unquote, the professional way, right?
Yeah.
And it's not a knock on community theaters. Community theaters are amazing, and they do things in a wonderfully spectacular way that serves their community.
Yeah.
But it's not the way it's taught. It's not always necessarily the way that we've been told how to do it, or with that process or those lines of communication, and that's okay. But it's nice to be able to take that professional process and stretch it out over what would be a community theater timeline, and it's a really nice little merging of those two worlds.
Yeah. What, you know, you're working on obviously a very wide range of shows right now and prepping for that. What is it about a story or a script that draws you to it? Like, is there something specific you look for?
Not anything specific per se, but I look for that hook that really digs into me.
Yeah.
About a story that is going to let me resonate with it in some way, shape, or form.
Sure.
I don't enjoy doing art for the sake of just doing art. You will never see me take a gig for Oklahoma. You know, it's just nothing in that story resonates with me. It's a fine piece of theater. I think plenty of people can enjoy it. But there's nothing, there's no characters in there that I really attach to. Mm-hmm. There's no identity in there that I attach to. So I really try and find pieces that while it may not speak for me directly, that I can at least kind of identify with in some way, shape, or form, because then I can ground myself in it, and then I can help. I feel obligated that I can tell that story at that point.
Yeah.
I want to have that connection point to it. There are plenty of stories out there that are beautiful and wonderful that need to be told, but I'm not necessarily the one who needs to tell it. So I want to make sure that they are stories that I am supposed to be telling, but also that I feel comfortable telling and that I feel that connection to be able to tell. I've relished the opportunity in getting older of being picky.
Yeah.
I don't take a gig just because it pays money or doesn't, whatever.
Right.
Exposure, any of those things. I take gigs or I take jobs because they interest me. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have all of the realm of the world to pick the shows at Augie. You know, the directors generally get that pick, but they do ask us for our opinions. So sometimes those aren't necessarily the things on my bucket list, so to speak. But I also don't have to say yes to all of these other side gigs just because they're there.
Right.
I get to say, oh, that's a piece I really want to work on, or oh, that's interesting. Sure, I'll do it. Or no, that's not really in my wheelhouse. Or no, I'm not really feeling it. Or no, I'm just tired and I'm busy. and I don't have time right now.
Right. Well, what is the bucket list?
Oh, boy. It feels like it's ever growing. Musical-wise, American Idiot is the top. Shelley and I commiserate about that all the time. She was supposed to do it here COVID year.
Yeah.
So it's been a pain point of her trying to even think about bringing it back up, which I totally understand. But someday, I told her, someday we are going to do that show together. Because I think between me and her, we could have a lot of fun with that style. Play-wise, like I said, that list just feels like it just keeps getting longer as time goes on. I'd really love a shot at directing 39 Steps. I've designed for it before, but just, again, that's just such a fun comedy in so many ways. And the opportunity rises all the time. I mean, that show is constantly in circulation.
Yeah.
But it's never been at the right time for me. So I think that would be a really, really fun one to knock off my list. But I'm constantly trying to read new stuff and see new stuff and hear about new stuff just from friends and contacts that are all over the place. There's one show, actually, that I would really love to get my hands on, and I don't even know if it's possible. She's actually an alumni of Augustana, and I met her while I was working in Florida, and we produced a play of hers called The God Game, and it is about a Republican senator who is... and his advisor, who is a closeted gay man, and his wife, and he is attempting to potentially run for president.
Okay.
And all of the things that go along with that. And that his ideologies don't necessarily line up with the party. And while, yes, he is a Republican in this case, it's really not necessarily about Republican versus Democrat. It's about aligning to party values and those sort of things. And you can see yourself on both sides of the aisle. And it was a really beautifully done piece of theater. And plus the fact that she had this Rock Island connection.
Yeah.
And it's just kind of been, when's going to be the right time for me to kind of spring that one?
Right.
Because I really enjoyed that piece of theater.
Fall of
2028. Right. We'll see how things are looking.
Right. If there is an election.
Yeah. But it was just this really cool kind of, and it was a new play at the time. She had just produced it, and so it was just, it kind of has always stuck to me that there, but as all shows, any show when you're an actor or a designer or anything, there's always those parts of like, I'd do that differently.
Yeah.
And there are some parts of that show that I would like to do just a little bit differently.
For more information on The Haunted Manor, you can go to www.skellingtonmanor.com. And this was Mike Terzinski. I'm Ben Gujan, and thanks for talking art.